world dominated by fear and mass manipulation of the media. Who can you trust? Just when you think there is no hope alive, you find out that there is an alternative news source to turn to. Revere Radio Network, keeping the dream of sovereignty and freedom alive for all. Revere Radio Network.
The views and opinions expressed in the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect the views of Revere Radio Network, Rob Revere, or any other host on the network. They are the personal thoughts and feelings of the host given the presentation. We support total free speech here at Revere Radio Network, even when it's ugly. Enjoy.
Hey, you're listening to Revere Radio Network. Stay tuned.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Do you understand what I'm talking about? What is our common bond truly? Freedom. Freedom. Without freedom, you can't be a Christian no matter what denomination you belong to. You can't be a Buddhist. You can't own a donut shop. You can't drive from here to Oregon. You can't be an American because that's what it's all about, and it's the only thing that it's all about. Nothing else. Nothing else.
The utmost manifestation of love and devotion to America is today, as it always has been, resistance of tyranny. Resist we must, and resist we will. We will not be silent. We will not obey. We will not wait another moment in fear to stand up for what we know to be right. It is time we start meeting oppression with resistance.
It's about freedom. Only freedom. It means you have to let other people be free.
All right. And I'm back for another week. Song of the Builders. The good old earth we turn with will and lusty song. For as we work and put our strength, the builders move along. Not very long gone by, our new home lie in the mine. But now it takes a body fair to benefit mankind. And to its portal wide will come those seeking far the truth to light their shadowed path, as doth the northern star. Within this stately form, for A, let these things be, the will to learn, to do, today, to dare, work for theosophy. And with that poem called The Song of the Builders, we start our December 11th, 2008 version of Truth, Love, Freedom, where we continue to break down the mystery schools and begin you on your path of initiation to understanding the higher mysteries. Or the lower mysteries, depending on what your opinion is about it. We're not going to start the actual initiation process today. I think we'll do that next week. This week I want to go into the evolutionary idea of the New World Order. This idea that man is progressing from beast to deity. And read, I got tons of books here. Two nice sized piles. I think there's like 30 books total. Or 30 quotes total. That we're going to go through. I'm hoping I can get through them all. So without further ado, I'm going to go ahead and go right into the new Health by Yourself segment with Jeff Smith. And then we'll get started, do a short break, and then we'll get started at that point.
The following health update is brought to you by Health by Yourself. Visit us on the web at healthbyyourself.net. Diet books are the number one selling books. Contained within those books are usually a set of rules, a list of what is good and what is bad. So most of us have sort of acquired some type of a list based on what we have been told or read. And what's happening is we're becoming dependent on other people to tell us what is good and what is bad for us. The more you are dependent on somebody else to tell you what is good or bad for you, the less skilled you are at determining for yourself what is good and what is bad for you. And I'll give an example that you can all relate to, and that is when you learn how to drive. Can you imagine if you were to teach a 16-year-old how to drive, and you go to a parking lot and you tell them, "Don't worry about looking around. I'll tell you exactly how to drive." So they go to drive and you say, "Left, right, stop, a little bit more to the right, a little more to the left, strong left." Would that be insane? Of course that would be insane. And the reason that is so ridiculous is because the driver is in the best position to determine how to drive. He has his hands on the steering wheel and his feet on the brakes. All he has to do is learn how to coordinate all the different parts, his eyes, his hands, his feet. And with practice, he gets better and better at it. So when he's first on the freeway, sure, he's wandering to the left and to the right, but after a few months, he's driving in a straight line. And that's entirely due to the fact that his nervous system is becoming more perceptive and coordinated. But did it ever occur to you that diet is the exact same thing? We have a whole area of our brain just for that. We have an area of our brain that tastes things. And then we have a physiological reaction every time we eat something, and we're just going to link the feeling of the reaction to the taste of the food, the color of the food, or the whole experience of the food. Once that food is stored in your memory and you need that reaction, you'll naturally crave that same food. It's so simple. So to learn how to drive, just open your eyes and throw the passenger out the door. Start off slow and practice. Within 3 months, you'll be driving 10 times better than you were before. So that's exactly the program that we use for nutrition. You're gonna throw away the books, so everything you eat, you're gonna taste it, and you're gonna notice how you react. Instead of thinking of the fettuccine Alfredo as being good or bad, think of it like this: it does something to you. You just have to figure out what it does, and then whether or not in the future you want that reaction. A couple quick examples. Let's say you're taking vitamins. It's easier to test vitamins if you can taste them. And also it's easier if you do it consistently. For instance, if you eat the vitamins with the same foods. And if they're liquid vitamins, you can taste them. So don't assume the vitamins are good or bad. It might take a few days of sort of establishing that reaction in your body. For the next few months, you may very well crave those vitamins. It's also very likely that after a few months, you don't crave them anymore. And we can presume that your body is now saturated with those vitamins. Whatever new recipes or whatever new foods you're doing, you're going to test them in the exact same way you would test a vitamin or anything else. You taste it, enjoy it, notice how you react. If your body needs it, you'll tend to want it more. You might notice that you need it at certain times. Your physiology is always changing. So in the same way a good driver can adapt to different conditions, a person who develops his food skills will have an internal list, a dynamic list, far more accurate than any expert could provide you. Thanks for listening. Visit us on the web at healthbyyourself.net.
Are you sick of being fed lie after lie by the mainstream media each day? Don't you feel it's time to stand up and be heard? Are you ready for the alternative media revolution? Ready or not, here we are. Revere Radio Network, bringing you the best in alternative news and commentary.
I I stand upon my own dick, an observation tower, if you will, a tower of Babylon. I look down on the field, surveying landscapes that thus far chosen to grow. The crop is hip-hop, we reap what we sow. It seems as though the sugar hills are burning and the rivers are bittersweet. Rock City's a ghost town with all my idols dead in the street. A guy named Puff on a gold mine, but for us it's running out. And the other side there's a tunnel with nothing good coming. The only thing feeding vegetation is my tears. People are trying to reach me, but they've been stuck in the same spot for years. I've never had any peers ever since I hit my teens. Can't look further north, can't stand the sight of the mainstream. But I heard tales from heads who drank from tributaries as I sat on my couch, the dead pen cemetery. Oddly enough, I see no churches of this religion.
We've been forced to worship true hip-hop from our homes.
The peasants fight for scraps, crap the junkyard, get new tracks to follow and recreate. The ground is hollow, I feel it quake. Sometimes you see B-boys hung and tortured in the park.
The sore sap patrols the streets, not letting heads out after dark.
Yeah, they own a market where they sell stereotypes. The non-existent cultures tell the children it's okay to fight. Every night I cross my heart and pray that it can't worsen. You see it all, living life is a third person.
Even though I'm in it to win it, I'm still an outside.
In the Eva event, bang pen against brainstem, swimming in the suicidal mindset, tripping on a veteran, talking like life almost defeated, soul opportunity knocking, so he begin tumbling and pummeling, towards walls of resistance, pan left and right, my vision's tunneling, beyond good and evil, he exists to spit phosphorus for mics, he hints that he's taking it to the next level, it's aight, the fear and heights, will not drop down to earth, armed with duct tape, shape verbs, create verse after verse, it's safe to say that fate and faith cannot coexist, I'm under the masterpiece of the ego trip down, it's fine. And we're all still ass out, sunny day in the igloo. Invisible man on landmines, love me or leave me alone. I own the future, that's on the past. Getting heads open like a Bill Gates. In my mind, it was first, and with my ass, I'll be the last. It all boils down to steam, so when I'm a cloud, I'll be happy to know I'm pissing flames on majority. Esteemed to be the happy minority. Say your money, like Trent, we'll be here to symbolize. Or they still try to signify and represent.
Even though I'm in it to win it, I'm still an outsider. So wait, I'm still an outsider.
Okay, let's get this party started. Well, I just got a few announcements to make. Number one, I'm talking about doing another show sometime during the course of the week. I'll let you guys know by next week probably what's going on, whether or not I'm going to have a new show or not. Also, I'm ashamed to say that I fell off the wagon for my raw food diet. I'm sorry. Thanksgiving really threw me off, let me tell you that much. You know, I am fully intending to fulfill my obligation to 60 days. I have recruited help from a couple people, my wife being one of them especially, because it's not so much I have a problem with eating the food, because it's totally good. It's just preparing it. It's such a pain. Like, I'm part of the fast food generation. Like, we, you know, if it can't be made in 5-10 minutes, I don't eat it usually, you know, unless somebody else is making it for me. So, you know, the thing about raw food is that you have to be consistent and, you know, I was not consistent. I found myself degrading down to practically no raw food at all. And what's even worse is that when I got off of it, I started spiraling out of control and picking up all these bad habits that I haven't had in a while, including smoking, for those who are watching the video. But I am going to shake this and get back on track, and hopefully with my help I'll fulfill it. And I'm not kidding, I'm starting from scratch. So all the days, the 2 weeks that I had gone through, I even went through a detox period. I'm restarting it and doing it again. I will succeed at this, I promise you. It's just going to take me some work, a little bit more work than what I was expecting that it would be. And just for a note, so no one gets confused, I am not taking calls until the last half of the show, even more, a little bit more towards the end of the last half, because of the fact that I'm going to be reading through a lot of quotes and don't want to watch the phones and don't want to get knocked off my train of thought, because it's really important for me to divulge this information to you. And I'm one of those people that you knock me off track and it's hard for me to get back on. You've heard in, you know, previous shows before and I'll start talking about something, and I'll just lose it. It'll just go away, and there's no getting it back. So, with that being said, let's start with our first quote. Now, I don't doubt that there's people out there who think that that what I'm saying is a bit extreme. Perhaps there is. I don't know. I mean, no one's told me anything. No one's really had any comments negative to say about what I've been saying. No one's challenged anything that I'm saying. And I don't know who's all listening out there. But, you know, I don't doubt that. I thought about it a little bit and I was like, okay, I bet you that's a little extreme to some people. You know, the idea that the average person lack of initiation or enlightenment, if you will, is somebody who's viewed as a primitive beast-like human being. So I decided to pull together some quotes and further drive that home, because I don't want that to be a mistake, this misunderstanding that, no, because I know there's some people out there who really believe these mystery cults are actually teaching religion. They're not teaching atheism. And I told everybody before, I believe the highest mysteries, the higher mysteries, if you will, are pure atheists. They don't believe in God. They do believe in metaphysics, but they believe in it as more of a science of the unknown. They think that there's elements that are unseeable, you know, like you got, I'm trying to remember what it's called. Anyways, if you ever seen Down the Rabbit Hole, that's the kind of stuff they believe in. They don't believe in God. They don't believe in spirits or deities or anything of the sort. They don't know what happens after you die, and they never really claim to. They do, you know, assume certain things may be true, but they don't. You know, they are basically atheists. And so, just to drive that home, I want to go through and drive this. I mean, go through all these books that I have and really lay it out so that there's no confusion and you don't think that I'm just pulling this out of my ass or making assumptions that aren't true. I literally read this from them. This is what they say. And that's what it's amazing to me is because as much as people, talk about it in a religious manner, it's sometimes I wonder, like, have you read the full book? I mean, I don't understand, because if you read almost every occult book that I've had, any book on religion from the mystery cult traditions, almost all of them, not saying all of them, but almost all of them, and the most prestigious, are the ones that say this. So, I don't know. I don't know why some people don't, you know, see this as being a fact, but let's go ahead and run through some quotes. Okay. Now, this is from The Beacon. It's a theosophical publication. From the Theosophic Research Society, I believe. Let me see here. It's Lucius Press publication. It is, this quote is not a quote from the publication. It's a quote from the book A Treatise on White Magic by any Besant, or I don't remember which one it is. It's either Besant or trying to remember who it is. Yeah, I think it is Besant. I'm pretty sure it's Besant. Anyways, it could be Bailey, but I'm pretty sure it's Besant. It's called Expansion of Human Consciousness. Much work is being accomplished by man for men, and through the agency of scientific, religious, and educational endeavor, the human consciousness is steadily expanding until one by one the sons of God are breaking through their limitations into the world of souls. In the retrospect of history, the picture of the emerging prisoner, we talked about the prisoner, the person who is bound by their emotional primitive characteristics, emerging prisoner, man, can be seen in clear delineation. Little by little, he has mastered the planetary boundaries. Little by little, he has grown from the stage of caveman to that of a Shakespeare, a Newton, a Leonardo da Vinci, an Einstein, a St. Francis of Assisi, I don't know how you say that, to a Christ and a Buddha. The capacity of man to achieve in any field of human expression seems practically unlimited, and the past few thousand years have seen such a stupendous growth. What shall we see in the next 5,000 years? If prehistoric man, little more than an animal, has grown into the genius, what unfoldment is not possible as more and more of an innate divinity makes itself its presence felt? The Superman is with us. What will the world manifest when all mankind is tending towards a concrete manifestation of superhuman powers? And it goes on and on and on. I'm not going to keep going through it. I got lots of quotes. Today I'm going for bulk and not length. So this is the Theosophic Society, the American Theosophist, by The Theosophic Life as Defined by H.P. Blavatsky. And I'm going to see who publishes it. It's probably Lucius. The Theosophical Society is what published it. Okay. And while cooperating with a lot of other bodies. But anyways, this is a quote with a big picture of a sun. For those in the camera who can see it. I don't know if anyone can see it. Probably not. There it is. The sun. Okay. The function of theosophists is to open men's hearts and understanding to charity, justice, and generosity, attributes which belong specifically to the human human kingdom and are natural to man when he was developed, when he has developed the qualities of a human being. Theosophy teaches the animal man to be a human man. And when people have learned to think and feel as truly human beings should feel and think, they will act humanely, and works of charity, justice, and generosity will be done spontaneously by all. Remember I told you, as you advance towards your intellect, reason takes over, it tames your passions, and you're able to do what they consider to be real morality. And, here you go, animal man. This is, quote, five messages from HPB, which is Blavatsky, to the American Theosophist. And we're going to keep going through. Some of them I'm going to read a little bit more at length because they're so enlightening. This is an interesting quote. And I'm not sure if this plays into it. I mean, I'm trying to be organized, but you know how I am. I always say this in every show. I'm not that organized. I do the best I can. I pull this all together like real quick before I start shows. So, I mean, I have a pretty busy work week, so the day of my show is the only day I have to get anything done, and I have other things to do beyond the show, so sometimes I'm a little disorganized. I get the quotes because I know they're there. I can just go through and find them, and then I come back and read them, but sometimes they're not in order, so bear with me. This is the foreword to the book, A Dictionary of Freemasonry, by Robert McCoy. Okay, and this is it's funny because I've talked to Freemasons before who would not quote Pike. They basically said, if you want to understand Freemasonry, get, you know, McCoy. They would always use McCoy as some kind of authority. Depends on which ones you talk to, but for the most part, McCoy is considered somewhat of an authority, I guess. It just depends on the individual and what they think, but several of them do. Foreword, Ordo Ab Chao, order out of chaos. This is the famous motto of the Supreme Council, 33rd degree of the ancient and accepted rite, the highest degree of the Freemasons. I laugh because there it is, over and over again. They believe there's higher degrees, but they say that there's not higher degrees. So what can you say? When the people who write these books constantly refer to it as a higher degree. Whatever. From the beginning of recorded time, the human race has sought to explore its mysterious origins and to explain and control the chain of causality. Order out of chaos means the occasion of rising beyond one's indiscriminate animal patterning, and so attaining a higher plane of existence. Let me say it again so you didn't miss it. Order out of chaos means the occasion of rising beyond one's indiscriminate animal patterning, and so attaining a higher plane of existence. To learn the way to the proper path, to continue the journey and complete as far as mortally possible, the wondrous voyage to a higher self and the unity of the whole. These are the goals of the Venerable Brotherhood of Freemasons, one of the most widely known fraternal organizations in the world. So there you got a couple already now, referring to the primitive man as an animal, coming from your animal state, the one in which your instincts rule over your mental consciousness, your ability to comprehend reason, your ability to make sense of your world using reason and knowledge, okay? Hence the term enlightenment. Like I said, enlightenment is the progression of you from a state when your passions ruled you, or order out of chaos. A state of chaos is a state when your passions rule, and that person, that primitive man, has control over the world. The order that's going to come about is the New World Order, or the order of the government of the people, of the enlightened people, the philosopher king, who has reached this level of enlightenment and has tamed his passions, and thus is in a position to guide society towards the future. the future world that they want to create. Let's see if I'm going to keep... I'll read one more... Yeah, I'll go ahead and read this. Let me see here. The Masonic route has taken many amazing twists and turns over history. By history, we mean the whole of the world history, religious history, and occult and mystical history, and has encountered much organized resistance, particularly from various branches of religions who felt that both their local and global influences were threatened by the religious and mystical principles of Freemasonry. From time to time, certain branches of Freemasonry have emulated or been accused of embracing activities in the occult sciences, particularly in the field of alchemy, astrology, and ceremonial magic. The mythology and symbolism of Freemasonry is so extraordinarily rich and complex. Like many such fields, it can be highly controversial in interpretation. Entire reference works have been devoted to the explications, the defeating of dangerous rumors, and the attempt to set the curious one step further on the road to knowledge. And I think that would be good. Yeah, I'll go ahead and move on from there. Next quote. I'm sorry if this is going to be boring for you, but I think that it'll definitely drive the point home. There's going to be some pretty outrageous quotes in here as we go through this. This is from Alice Bailey's The Externalization of the Hierarchy, another student of Madame Blavatsky, and the founder of Lucius Trust, the head of the Theosophical Society for a period of time, who claimed that through three things we're going to bring about the New World Order, which was the Masonic fraternity, the education system, and I don't remember what the other one was. Let me look. Talks about disarmament, socialist style government, all this great stuff that they want to create. Wow. Well, I think I lost that quote too. Unfortunately. Like I said, I'm not organized, but I'll do my best. But it's going to be through the Freemason, Masonic fraternity, and through the educational system. Oh, and through the church, the Christian church, because the Christianity is supposed to be the most prominent religion, and their idea is to get involved in it and mystically interpret the Bible in order to bring people from Christianity out of it to a more universalist style of faith. So they refer to it as the church, and she's specifically talking about Christianity. I think she's one of the first ones to actually really talk about incorporating Christianity into the vision, because they wanted to eliminate Christianity. They didn't want to merge it, and she brought in the idea to merge. So basically, the work of the externalized ashrams. This is like one of the last. This is the last page actually in the book. So meanwhile, what is it that you, my brothers, must do in this interim period? Basically, she was talking about the New World Order isn't ready yet. But what can you do to help bring it about? This is the great work. This is the work that they feel like they have to do. What is your work and your goals? Let me emphasize one or two points. The material goal, which all who love their fellow man and serve the hierarchy must ever have in mind, at heart, is the defeat of totalitarianism. I do not say the defeat of communism, but the defeat of the evil process, which involves the imposition of ideas, and which can be the method of democratic nations and the churches everywhere, just as much as it is the method of the USSR. This we call totalitarianism. I would ask you to have this distinction clearly in your minds. The material goal is to defeat all that infringes human free will and which keeps humanity in ignorance. Now, let's stop there. The funny thing about it is, it depends on, that's a perspective type of thing. It's a matter of, you know, what you personally believe. You know, for example, who's to say that participating in her vision isn't ignorance? I mean, that's a pretty elitist mentality. If you think that, you know, you're so right that you can speak as every other opposing viewpoint than the one that you have is ignorance and totalitarianism, that's an absurdity. I mean, that's totally elitist, and it's just ethically wrong down to its fundamental core. I mean, you can't sit there and think that you're so right that you can do all the things that she talks about in this book. And she literally talks about infiltrating and educating people through the educational system. If that's a deceptive method of spreading your message. If you're trying to infiltrate the educational system so that you can push your particular idealistic worldview, I'm sorry, that's just ethically wrong, in my opinion. And I think a lot of people would agree. I don't think that, I mean, no matter what, if it's an opinion that you believe in, you probably don't think it's a bad thing. But if it's something you don't believe in, it is a bad thing. So as far as I'm concerned, any idea that doesn't allow, I mean, it's okay to disseminate information and allow people to make up their own mind, but to infiltrate and subtly introduce ideas to children so that when they grow up, they'll be ready to accept her idea of a worldview is an absurd idea. It is elitist and it is wrong. Okay? My opinion. Let me continue here. Okay, I lost it here. Defeat human will keeps human. Okay, it applies equally to any established system, Catholic or Protestant. Wow, any system. That's a real variation there, isn't it? You know, it's two opposing views in the same religion, which imposes its concepts and its will upon its adherents. Well, you don't have to adhere to it. I mean, at one time you did, but you don't have to anymore. Totalitarianism is the basis of evil today. It is found in all systems of government, of education. It is found in the home and in the community. I refer not to the laws which make group relations sound, possible, and right. Such laws are essential to community and national well-being and are not totalitarian in nature. I refer to the imposition of the will of the few upon the total mass of the people. The defeat of this undesirable tendency everywhere is your definite material goal. Your spiritual goal is the establishing of a kingdom of God. One of the first steps towards this is to prepare men's minds to accept the fact, and emphasis on fact, that the reappearance of the Christ is imminent. You must tell men everywhere that the masters and their groups of disciples are actively working toward bringing order out of chaos. She's right. And this is why I always say, you know, these people who participate in Theosophy and New Age, they are not the higher mysteries, they are the lower mysteries. This is the exoteric interpretation. Because they still have not they listen to the religious mumbo jumbo and they've embraced it as what they're actually teaching. And that's not what they're teaching. The hierarchy that they're referring to are the higher mysteries, the occult people who are atheists but teach in a religious manner. So just to make that clear, that's where I'm coming from, at least. That's where I believe they're at. You must tell them that there is a plan, and that nothing can possibly arrest the working out of the plan. You must tell them that the hierarchy stands, and that it has stood for thousands of years and is the expression of the accumulated wisdom of the ages. You must tell them, above all else, that God is love, that the hierarchy is love, and that Christ is coming because he loves humanity. Now, bear in witness, they believe in Christ consciousness. They don't believe in Jesus Christ specifically. And most of the time when you listen to these people talk, they say the Messiah, because they talk about the idealism of the Messiah, but they do not, they always make a point to say that they're not talking about the Christian version of it. So don't be deceived, okay? the one that they're referring to is the one, they believe Buddha was a Messiah, and you know, and they have this idea of this Messiah who's coming that all religions are waiting for. And it's called Lord Maitreya. This is the message which you must give at this time. And with the responsibility I leave you, work my brothers. Now, I'm not kidding. This is a laid out book trying to tell the people of this belief system to infiltrate and educate. Not good. I don't think I could agree, no matter, even if I agreed with the view, I don't think I could be okay, even with my personal views being taught like that. I would be totally against it. It's against the principles of freedom and free mind. You know, it is so elitist, too, because they always, she refers to it especially as a fact. And everybody else is ignorant, and everybody else is this. And she acts, and she says, oh, we're God is love, and the hierarchy is love, and they use love over and over and over again. But, I mean, I'm sorry, that just does not sound like love to me. Not my idea of love, you know. I understand that they think that they're concerned for people, and they're trying to help them out, but anything that's deceptive by nature is wrong. It's just wrong. I can't even pretend to think that it's okay to do. And when I had the interview with the Freemasons, they talked, I told them, I believe the Masonic pattern of teaching is deceptive. They don't tell the people what they're getting involved in. They take them through this process of initiation, which is, initiation, you might as well interchange it with indoctrination, because they don't tell you what to believe. They're just dropping pieces of information in your head to try to get you to come along with their program. And, that's deceptive. And to them it's okay, because, hey, the end is this great utopian vision. So, it's justified. You can do these types of things, and it's okay. I went to a New Age store that has recently shut down in my area, and I talked to the guy who owned the place. I guess I didn't look like a New Ager when I went in. I was, rocking hip-hop gear and stuff like that. And I go in there, and I'm reading through the books and looking for stuff, just to see what's out there. And they didn't have anything that fancy that I was really interested in, but, I just decided to stick around because he kept looking at me. I knew he'd come over and talk to me. So he did. He came over and talked to me. We had like an hour and a half conversation. And they have things on the wall that were painted on the wall. It said love and peace and truth and all these great fuzzy words. And, in the process of the conversation, we had a very in-depth conversation, and he was surprised. And he acknowledged that I knew a lot of stuff about the occult and esoteric stuff. And he basically, toward the end, I used the word occult. And he goes, oh, we don't use that word. I said, why not? He goes, it scares people away. I said, well, what word do you use? He goes, we use the New Age. I said, but that New Age is only one aspect of the entire idea. It's only one part of it. There's a whole bunch more. He goes, yeah, but nobody else knows that. I mean, he right there, basically relating to me, felt comfortable enough to tell me that they're deceiving people intentionally. That he knows it's the esoteric occult, interpretation of the faith, and that the New Age is this external thing. And it just blew me away that he could have all that stuff written on the wall, and then that type of thing to him was justified. Let me read another quote here. This is from Manly P. Hall, Secret Teachings of All the Ages. And bear with me, this is a really big book with really small print. War, the irrefutable evidence of irrationality, still smolders in the hearts of men. It cannot die until human selfishness is overcome. Armed with multifarious inventions and destructive agencies, civilization will continue its fratricidal strife through future ages. But upon the mind of man, there is dawning a great fear. The fear that eventually civilization will destroy itself in one great cataclysmic struggle. Then must be reenacted the eternal drama of reconstruction. Out of the ruins of civilization, which died when its idealism died, some primitive people yet in the womb of destiny must build a new world. Foreseeing the needs of that day, the philosophers of the ages have desired that into the structure of this new world shall be incorporated the truest and finest of all that has gone before. It is a divine law that the sum of previous accomplishments shall be the foundations of each new world, new order of things. The great philosophic treasures of humanity must be preserved. That which is superficial may be allowed to perish. That which is fundamental and essential must remain, regardless of cost. Indeed. Regardless of the cost. Two fundamental forms of ignorance were recognized by the Platonists. And I talked about this last time. Plato in the book Republic is definitely something you should check into, because a lot of these utopian ideas come from philosophy, specifically that particular book. Two fundamental forms of ignorance were recognized by the Platonists: simple ignorance and complex ignorance. Simple ignorance is merely the lack of knowledge and is common to all creatures existing posterior of the first cause, which alone has perfection of knowledge. Simple ignorance is an ever-active agent, urging the soul onward to the acquisition of knowledge. From this virginal state of unawareness grows the desire to become aware, with its resultant improvement in the mental condition. The human intellect is ever surrounded by forms of existence beyond the estimation of its partly developed faculties. Are you catching this? I really hope you are. I mean, there's so many quotes here, and I'm not breaking them down so much this time. But you know, right there, he says that you're partially developed faculties. Basically, you're not developed yet. I mean, we're on a process of evolution, and depending on what you believe, it will determine what part of evolution you are on, what part of the spectrum you belong to. Are you closer to the man, the enlightened man, or are you closer to the animal? Are you closer to primitive state? The rough, you know, talked about the ashlar, the philosopher's stone, the transmutation of metals. All of this refers to the elimination of things that are, you know, unclean in the body or whatever. They use all these definitions to refer to them to bring you into a perfect state, to man's progress, to perfection. Okay? This is the cause of the New World Order. Now, when I say the great work, there's multiple principles of the great work. The great work is a personal thing. On a personal level, it's your progression towards enlightenment and towards evolution, your higher state of consciousness, right? The great work also refers to the external, which is the world and how it is affected by people who are progressing towards their perfected state. That is also the great work. So when you're referring to the great work, you're referring to the internal and the external. The external being this utopian society and the people who are more enlightened guiding the rest of society towards what they call the great work, the New World Order. Okay? This is where the New World Order comes from. It is a utopian vision of these people. And it's really hard for me to listen to people talk about the New World Order when they dissect and or they divide and they don't refer to it, the religious aspects. Because the religious aspects are what make the political aspects. It's not the other way around. The New World Order wasn't created first. The New World Order, you know, the idea of the New World Order wasn't the first thing. It was the religious dogma that these people have. This is the effect of their internal beliefs, outwardly expressed through these institutions, which they refer to as the mystery schools. Let me see here. I'll go ahead and move on from there. All right, this is from The History of Magic by Eliphas Levi. Now, I've talked before about the fact that what they're teaching is science. It's absent the more primitive aspects. They literally believe that that in the past, man was so primitive, he was trying to make sense of his existence. And it started out with simple things like ideas of magic and the shaman. The shaman eventually evolved into a priest and the religion. The doctrine was established and myths were attributed to things in nature. And those eventually turned into religions. The religions splintered off and they continued to splinter on and on and on into different denominations as people are progressing, trying to understand reality. But there are certain people who were evolved, and they even go so far sometimes, they imply that this is possible, but they rarely say it's a fact. There's a few people who say it's a fact that the shaman, the original shaman, were people who were evolved and realized the truth, the higher truth, which is that there is no God. And they use these myths to help bring people, the primitive man, into a better state of consciousness, that it was part of an evolutionary process. Because if you were to take the primitive man and you were to teach him the truth that there is no God, there's on all these forces that they were trying to make sense of, things like eclipses and so on, and the seasons and all this other stuff, was just all a cyclical nature in science, that it wasn't, you know, what they thought it was, like the sun was basically being eaten or whatever, you know, depending on who observed it and what myth you're talking about, you know, they would have basically destroyed each other. They were not prepared for that knowledge yet. And in fact, in their crudest state, in their more primitive state, it was they were already a dangerous person, and that the religious aspects brought them, tamed them, brought them into this idea that there's a higher power, that there's a moral moral rules that they have to live by and participate in order for themselves to be okay in the afterlife or whatever. Depending on which one you go through, I'm being very vague here because there's so many different versions of this. But that this was all done as a necessity to help bring man into a state of peace with one another. But through that also came more war. They were not, you know, there was further evolved, and, you know, they wouldn't do as much rape. They wouldn't do as much killing. They wouldn't do as much of these horrible things. But they still did it. And this time they were doing it on behalf of God. So they had to continue to the process. And they believe that now we're coming into an age where science is going to replace that. However, they do recognize that some people are just not ready to live civilly. They're not ready to embrace the idea that there is no God and that science is ultimately man's highest purpose, is to discover science, discover nature, master the elements, and so on. So basically what they're going to do is they're going to produce a religion suited to man that can help bring about the accomplishments that they want to bring about for those who are of higher intelligence, but that will bring man out of the primitive religious state and merge them all together into this peaceful union, this new world religion that they refer to. And this is going to be a harmonious religion where all these different elements are going to come into play. And the key to this is an esoteric, what they consider to be the esoteric. The funny thing about it is those people who believe they're teaching the esoteric interpretation of religion are actually teaching the exoteric interpretation of religion. The higher mysteries are the ones who actually embrace the idea that there is no God, that there is no divine source or intelligence out there, and that man is responsible for the future of mankind, and that the future that they want to bring about is one that can only be accomplished by embracing this reality. And hence they're going to bring about this utopian world vision, what they call the New Age or the Age of Reason or the magnum opus of the world or the Great Work. They have various names for it, but it's all the same thing. It's a utopian society based on a philosophic commonwealth, where the people who rule are the people who are smarter than everybody else, the people who have demonstrated their knowledge and their wisdom. Them. The people who, I mean, obviously they think they are those people. I mean, you know, they're not talking about people beyond them. They're talking about themselves, which is very convenient, I think. You know, I mean, if you think you're the most intelligent in the world, you're forming associations and you're infiltrating governments and, you know, producing this great plan so that you and people like you and part of your association can rule. And, you know, and for the most part, many of the people involved do believe in this. They believe that there are just smarter people and they're one of them, and it's their responsibility to guide mankind. You know, and to what end? Who knows? I mean, they claim that there's going to be this great world of peace, but, and we always talk, like William Cooper used to always say, you know, every time they talk about this great world of peace, this new world order, this utopian society, the blood runs in the streets. You know, so, I mean, how much blood is going to be spilt to produce this new world order? And then once it gets here, because so much blood was spilt in order to produce it, what guarantees do I have to know that it's going to be a good one? Or that it's even going to be worth it at all? I mean, you're walking around in this utopian society. There's no poor. You know, the government seems to be, you know, letting you have a modicum of freedom. All the things that they claim is going to happen. There's no totalitarianism. It seems to be this great utopian world. You don't have to work as much. You know, the, you know, technology helps prevent you from having to work so much and so on. You know, what guarantee that I have that, you know, say I have a certain idea or I start, you know, want to do something that's considered outlawed, you know, and they're not going to come beat down my door. You know, like, there's no guarantee. I mean, there's no guarantee that first of all, you're going to be, you as an individual are good enough to be allowed into it. And number two, once you actually get there, that it's actually going to be a world of peace in your eyes. I mean, this is a group of people's particular worldview. They think it's utopian. You take that same idea of utopianism and you apply it to something like Christianity. Well, Christianity has a utopian vision where Christ rules over the world and so on. And that, to other people, is a nightmare. You know, you got the Islamic view. You got all these different views about a utopian world and how they view it and how it looks to them. And no matter what, when a person gets their utopia, it means it's at the detriment of thousands of millions. I'm talking millions of other people. Because there's not enough of one belief system for everyone to agree. So, you know, they're going to have conflict. And that's what they always say. The New World Order is going to be met with backlash. And they know that for a fact. That's why they're preparing this police state thing. They're preparing the prisons. They're getting, you know, these huge prisons set up outside of every major city, FEMA camps and things of that sort. They're, you know, they're using technology to infringe and find people who are trying to lead you into the knowledge of what's going on. And they're going to, you know, they're going to keep tracks on them, tabs on them. And I don't doubt they're going to take them out if they get to be too powerful or influence too many people. And, you know, this is the kind of situation that they're setting up. And people say, oh, the New World Order is a police state. And I'm saying, no, the New World Order is not a police state. The New World Order has police state elements to it because they have to set these things up to prevent the backlash from winning. They know it's coming. But I guarantee the people who backlash aren't going to be there in the New World Order. They're going to be done away with one way or another. The people who are in favor of the New World Order, who come along with the religious idealism, the people who come along with the political idealism, are going to be allowed into the New World Order. Everybody else is going to be gotten rid of. And they say, you know, they always talk about this world of peace, but you got to understand, too, that, you know, most of the people who are dying right now, the people in Iraq and what they're going to war in Iraq for, Afghanistan, and the future wars that are coming and the ones in the past, I mean, think about how many people died, women and children. What makes you think for a second they ain't going to put a bullet in your ass to prevent you from coming into it if you disagree with it? These people don't care if people have to die in order to accomplish their goals. That's a frightening scenario there. So as much as they throw this whole world of peace and thing out there, I guarantee you too, the funny thing about it is, and I always say that, the funny thing, but the thing about it that you have to understand is that when they do make the transition into the New World Order, the people who are supporting this transition are going to look back on all the murdering, all the wars that they caused, that the hierarchy caused, and they're going to think it was something else. They're going to blame it on something else. I don't know if it's going to be on the Christians or on the Muslims or on the Republicans or the Democrats or any of those so-called old paradigms that everyone's talking about these days. Those are what are going to take the blame for the fall. But I guarantee it, behind every single one of those things is the mystery cult religion. They're the ones pursuing the advancement and the ones who are sending military troops in and bombing and doing the things that they're doing. They're doing it because they're trying to speed up the process of this new world order. So, yeah, that's what I'm saying. When we get to the end, when we come to the end game here, and we're standing, you know, and I'm not saying we, because I'm probably not going to be part of that. I'm sure I'll be gone by then. And I'm hoping I'll be dead before that happens, because it ain't going to be a pretty scenario, okay? I have kids. I don't want them going through that. I want to see it pushed off as far as we can get it. But, you know, the people who are part of the agenda, who are staying there, are going to be looking at the world, and they're going to think it's this great world. I guarantee it is going to be the utopian world that they always dreamt of. The only thing is, the people who ran it, the people who created the utopian vision, and all the things that they did, the atrocities that they did in order to accomplish it, is going to be on their hands. I mean, that's what I think. If you're in support of it, the blood is on your hands. And, you know, I can't help but wonder, you know, like, how many of these people who are against it now are going to think that this transition, because I'm sure they're not going to call it the New World Order. They're going to call it something else. I mean, but it's still going to be the same thing. The problem is too many people are perceiving the New World Order to be a police state, and so when it's not, they're going to be like, see, we won. This great world of peace, there's no, you know, no currency anymore, we're not enslaved, it seems all free, and this and that, as long as you believe what they believe, and the second you change your mind, you better watch your ass. I guarantee it. You come to some kind of divine revelation that some particular religion is a better one than the one that you believe in, and everybody believes in that, it's going to be, you know, a bullet to your head, man. I'm serious. That's the world that's coming. They have no tolerance for people who they consider to be lesser. You're slowing down evolution, and they don't want your poisonous belief system infecting society and preventing man from progressing. I mean, that's the sad truth about it. And that's the real tragedy of the whole thing that we have in the so-called movement, is that people are literally believing that the world that's coming, the New World Order, is actually the police state. No, the police state is the process of it's the transition period. It's there to you know, not to say that there isn't going to be cameras everywhere tracking everybody, but like I said, the idea is that everyone's going to believe in it through a system of indoctrination. They're going to indoctrinate everybody into believing it. From the time your kids are in school, you're going to send them off to an education system for their best benefit, of course, and they're going to be educated to the proper education that they want to teach them. And by the time they come older, they're going to be so indoctrinated into a belief system that it's going to be really difficult for them to shake it. There's going to be no other opposing views to challenge those. People are not going to be able to say, you know, oh, there's this religion and that religion. Well, I need to investigate and see what I want to believe. It's not going to be that way. So it's going to be really hard for them to think outside the box because there's going to be nobody else around to challenge it. And the police state that's coming is going to be the process by which they accomplish this. And I guarantee, you know, when they finally achieve it, they're not going to get the blame for it. It's going to be somebody else. Everyone's going to look back in history and think about that time that all those poor people died. And they're not going to know why. They're just going to know that they were extinguished. And it was probably because of this and whatever reason they decide to make. I mean, that's what I think is going to happen. So let me read this quote here about the joining of science and religion. This comes from The History of Magic by Eliphas Levi. Further evidence that they are not talking about a religion as much as they use religion, religious mumbo jumbo. And I'm telling you, if you read this book, The History of Magic by Eliphas Levi, translated by A.E. Waite, a Freemason, if you read this book, all the way up until the very end here is all religion. It's all cult religion. They're symbols. This is the guy who created the Baphometic goat, okay, and a lot of other symbols that are supposed to teach you duality. And if you look at all the symbols, I talked to you about duality. If you haven't heard that, go to my website, truthlovefreedom.org, and listen to the teaching on duality. My podcasts are all posted there. And over and over again, you see the dualistic principle. And here I'm seeing the Key of Solomon, and there's the dark and light sides contrasting each other, making balance, with the serpent eating its tail, symbolic of the cyclical nature of the earth. As he eats, he produces more of himself, his body, and so he can eat forever. It's an ongoing cycle. That's what it represents. So anyways, I'm still going off on rants. I got to calm down here a little bit, but focus in on the quotes. All right, let's see. Okay, this is going to be a pretty long one. I'm not sure how much of this is going to be valid or not, but let's go ahead and read it because it's all good. It's all knowledge. It's all helping you understand what's going on here. The common people are initiated by toil and by faith into the right of property and knowledge. There will always be such a people, as there will be children always. But when the aristocracy endowed with wisdom shall become a mother to the people, the path of personal, successive, and gradual emancipation will be open to all. And he that is called will be thereby be enabled through his own efforts to attain the rank of the elect. This is that mystery of the future which antiquity initiation concealed in its dark recesses. So basically what he's saying there is that when these elect people control the world, it'll allow everybody else to become elect. And that was the mystery of the future which antiquity initiation concealed in its dark recesses. The miracle of nature made subject to the will of the man. The miracles of nature made subject to the will of man are reserved for the elect to come. The crook of the priesthood shall become the rod of miracles. It was so in the time of Moses and Hermes. It will be so again. Now, of course, that sounds very mystical and religious. And I'm going to read another quote after I read this quote. That will enlighten you, as it were. The scepter of the Magus will be that of the world's king or emperor. And that person will by right be first among men who shall have shown himself greatest of all in knowledge and in virtue. Magic at that time will be no longer an occult science, except for the ignorant. It will be one that is incontestable for all. Then shall universal revelation, resolder, one to another, all links of its golden chain. And the human epic will close, and even the efforts of titans will have served only to restore the altar of the true God. Nature, by the way. All forms which have clothed the divine throughout successively will be reborn immortal and perfect. All those features sketched by the successive art of nations will be united to form the perfect image of God. Having been purified and brought out of chaos, dogma will give birth to naturally to an infallible ethic, and the social order will be constituted on this basis. Systems which are now in warfare are dreams of the twilight. Let them pass. The sun shines and the earth follows its course. Distracted is he who doubts that the day is coming. I'm distracted, by the way. No, I know it's coming, but I'm doing everything I can to stop it. I guess that makes me distracted. Distracted also are those who say Catholicism is only a dead trunk and that we must put an axe thereto. They do not see beneath its dry bark the living tree is renewed unceasingly. Truth has no past and no future. It is eternal. It is not that which ends. It is our dream only. Hammer and hatchet, which destroy in the sight of man, are in God's hand for the knife of the... Okay, blah, blah, blah. Knife of a pruner and the dead branches, being superstitions and heresies in religion, science and politics, can alone be lopped from the tree of everlasting conviction and belief. And this is going to finish off this quote. It has been the purpose of the history of magic to demonstrate that at the beginning the symbols of religion were those also of science, which was then in concealment. So they concealed it within the religion, the science. Okay, they concealed the science in religion using symbols. May religion and science reunite in the future, give help and show love to one another, like two sisters, for there's been one cradle. So... Now, this is, okay, so, you know, obviously, I understand if you're hearing that and you're thinking to yourself, oh, perhaps, you know, he's wrong. Perhaps they are talking about a religion. I mean, there's a lot of religious mumbo-jumbo there. I don't see how you can really make that distinction. Well, let's hear a quote from him. The writer of these books gives lessons willingly to serious and interested persons in search of these. This is his appendix, by the way. But once and for all, he desires to forewarn his readers that he tells no fortunes, does not teach divination, makes no predictions, composes no philtres, and lend himself to no sorcery and no evocation. He is a man of science, not a man of deception. He condemns energetically whosoever is condemned by religion, and hence he must not be confounded with persons who can be approached without hesitation on a question of applying their knowledge to a dangerous or illicit use. He's referring to religion as an illicit or dangerous use of this knowledge. You know, and for the rest, he welcomes honest criticism, yada yada, and he basically is inviting you to criticize his stuff, but he's basically making it clear. He does not believe in divination. He does not believe in predictions or any of the other sorceries and anything else that has to do with the primitive aspects of the cult teachings. So, there you go. Hopefully that clarifies, at least from him, that he is not teaching on that behalf. And this is where Albert Pike gets a lot of his stuff. And Pike also has a lot to say about this being science and not, you know, superstition. He always refers to it. Like I said, the three ruffians in the first three degrees of Freemasonry are ignorance, superstition, and fear. Those are the three inhabilitating things that prevents man from progressing and evolving towards a higher state. Ignorance, superstition, and fear. When they talk about this stuff, they're talking about science. But they're teaching it as religion because everybody else outside of them doesn't realize that. And some people cannot know the truth because it would become a dangerous thing. They're not ready for it. If people knew that there was no God, they have no moral bounds or constraints to do whatever they want, and they are not, you know, in what they call intellectually superior, or what do you call it, intellectually evolved enough to have the intellectual based morals that I talked about, then they're going to go out and destroy the earth. They're basically going to become the savages of the planet and destroy. And they're not ready for that. So they need to teach everything masked in religion, and those who can get it, the ones who have the intellectual capacities, will be able to read between the lines and get it. And those who don't, well, they'll become, you know, they'll stay Freemasons and get into Gnosticism and maybe even be a Christian, I mean, whatever. They believe Gnosticism to be higher than all the different world religions, and above that, the higher mysteries, they don't ever really say what they believe, but they hint at it, and you're supposed to pick it up. Let me see here. Got another hour. I'm going through these books pretty fast. Now, these are books that, okay, this is all the religious books. I went through a lot of Masonic books, Theosophical books, occult books. These are books that are not that. These are books are, well, one of them is. Two are on religion in general. One's called The History of God. One's called Experiencing World Religions. One's Zbigniew Brzezinski's Between Two Ages. Imagine what two ages he's referring to. The age of the primitive man, of chaos, and the new man through technology. That's what it's about, technology. So anyways, I welcome you to read it. It's very enlightening. And he always drops these hints. I love reading Zbigniew Brzezinski stuff because it's obvious. He's a student of this, of these ideas of the occult, because he uses the term order out of chaos and so on. Well, I'll go ahead and read that to you, so I'm not just saying it. I've read it before, but I'll read it again for those who haven't heard me say it before. This is under the chapter, The Quest for a Universal Vision. Man came silently into the world, but though his coming is shrouded in mystery, in the sense that we still know little about the actual beginnings of human existence, from earlier known history, man has given evidence of an intense yearning to understand himself and his environment. However crudely and primitively, man has always sought to crystallize some organizing principle that would, by creating order out of chaos, relate him to the universe and help define his place in it. So here's another quote. This is at the very end of the book. This is his somewhat of a conclusion. This is part of his conclusion. The conclusion is very big. But this book is called Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era. And he's talking about world government. Risks and advantages. The shaping of such a community may well provoke changes that its emergence would accentuate the division in the world already threatened by fragmentation. The answer to such objections is twofold. First, division already exists, and our present problem is how best to deal with it. As long as the advanced world is itself divided and in conflict, it will be unable to formulate coherent goals. The less developed countries may even be benefiting from the internal rivalries in the developed world, which incite it to compete in extending aid. But since such aid tends to be focused on short-term political advantages to the donor, it is subject to political fluctuations and may decline as the rivalry declines in intensity. Second, the emergence of a more cooperative structure among the more developed nations is likely to increase the possibility of a long-range strategy for international development based on the emerging global consciousness rather than the old rivalries. I think I'll go ahead and end it there. And he goes on to talk about the formulation of world government. This is his book, The Grand Chessboard. In brief, the U.S. policy goal must be unapologetically twofold, just like his last book, right? To perpetuate America's own dominant position for at least a generation and preferably longer still, and to create a geopolitical framework that can absorb the inevitable shocks and strains of social-political change while evolving into geopolitical core of shared responsibility for peaceful global management. A prolonged phase of gradually expanding cooperation with key Eurasian partners, both stimulated and arbitrated by America, can also help foster the preconditions for an eventual upgrading of an existing and increasingly adequate UN structure. A new distribution of responsibilities and privileges can then take into account the changed reality of global power, so drastically different from those in 1945. These efforts will have to add historical advantage of benefiting the new web of global linkages that is growing exponentially outside the more traditional nation-state system. That web, woven by multinational corporations, NGOs, non-governmental organizations, with many of them transnational in character, and scientific communities, and reinforced by the internet, already creates an informal global system that is inherently congenial to more institutionalized and inclusive global cooperation. In the course of the next, this is his conclusion, by the way. I mean, the very last paragraph of his book. In the course of the next several decades, a functioning structure of global cooperation based on geopolitical realities could thus emerge a gradual, could thus emerge and gradually assume the mantle of the world's current regent, which has for the time being. For the time being, assume the burden of responsibility for world stability and peace. Geostrategic success in that cause would represent a fitting legacy of America's role as the first and only and last truly global superpower. So basically, like he says, he's the America is supposed to be the last one, and it's going to merge into this great world government. But like I said, I don't think the United States is going to end up leading us in there. I think that's a fallacy. But we'll see what happens. So we're talking about world government, this vision. You gotta understand that you take the politics. The politics came as a result of the theology. You can't separate the two. And you really can't. If you do, you're mistaken, because you're going to start thinking, oh, there's some kind of socialist agenda. Oh, it's money. You know, people always tell me that the higher ups of this world that are in control are all about money and power. Money and power. But the same, you know, there's been, they already have money and power, and they're still pursuing the New World Order, and they're hemming down the agenda for hundreds of years now. How could it possibly be that that's all that they're seeking? There's got to be something more to it. These people are motivated by a belief. Now, the thing about it is, you have to realize, is that people always like to point it at the really higher ups, like the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, this, the that. All the people with a strong grip on the economy and power, the corporations, the people in government, so on. And they like, and granted, there is a system of control there. But you have to understand that this system is a lot bigger than I think people want to admit. I think that people want to think that it's not that big. That, you know, it's a small group at the top of the pyramid. No, this, I'm talking to people at college. I had a course at college with a guy who taught the comparative religions course, and he was totally in support of the New World Order. I mean, they know what it's called, and they know they're behind it. They're all about it. There's so many people on board. And it's not because they're people who are Freemasons or people who got into the occult. They're teaching this stuff at a university level now. They teach it, but it's purely science now. The people who are more intellectually superior, they believe, go to universities. They don't need institutions like Freemasonry anymore, because the dogmatic church system does not rule the system anymore. They do. So they're using the educational path to educate people, and that's what you're getting in schools. And kids are growing up through the indoctrination process as we speak. And in university levels, they're teaching this interpretation of religion, comparative religion, by tracing the root of religion, and it's being sold to, you know, I mean, how many graduates do we have a year? Thousands, easily. I mean, hundreds of thousands? I don't know. I don't know how many people graduate from universities each year. I went to a couple last year. There was a lot of kids there. I mean, there was probably 10,000 graduating in one of the colleges I went to. It was a huge, I mean, it was in an auditorium. It was huge. And these are people who are getting this type of education. And they're coming out and, you know, they're developing these ideas based upon other books that they're reading. You know, here's a book called The History of God. It was a New York Times bestseller. And let me read what she wrote. And they're always talking about, you know, things are changing, man. We're coming into a new paradigm. Get ready for this new paradigm, this new future, this, that. And they talk about the new future and what it's going to look like and how it's going to be absent of religion and things like that. I mean, it's getting to be, like, common. But Freemasonry, the purpose of Freemasonry was to teach it at a time when you couldn't write a book like that. It would not be a bestseller, and people would be really pissed off if you did, you know. But that's what Freemasonry was for. Freemasonry was an institution that was supposed to bring people into the state of enlightenment and still conceal who they are, what they believe. Nowadays, you can believe whatever you want. In the United States, we have seen that 99% of the population claim to believe in God. Yet the prevalence of fundamentalism, apocalypticism, and instant charismatic forms of religiosity in America is not reassuring. The escalating crime rate, drug addiction, and the revival of the death penalty are not signs of a spiritually healthy society. In Europe, there is a growing blankness where God once existed in the human consciousness. One of the first people to express this dry desolation, quite different from the heroic atheism of Nietzsche, was Thomas Hardy. In the Darkling Thrush, written in December 30th, 1900, at the turn of the 20th century, he expressed the death of spirit was no longer able to create a faith in life's meaning. And she puts a quote, but I'm not going to read it. It's not that important. Human beings cannot endure emptiness and desolation. They will fill the vacuum by creating a new focus of meaning. The idols of fundamentalism are not good substitutes for God. If we are to create a vibrant new faith for the 21st century, we should perhaps ponder the history of God for lessons and warnings. And in this book, she also talks about order out of chaos. I don't have that marked. And she goes through, and this is basically comparative religion. She's breaking down the relationship between all religions, how it all comes from an ancient form of paganism. And obviously, if you come to that conclusion, I don't see what the point is of continuing to cling to a belief in God. If you already embrace the idea that all religions originated with a form of paganism, ritual, magic, based upon the elements and primitive understandings of what the world was made of, I don't see what the point of continuing to believe in that. I mean, most people don't either. They get to that point, and they just kind of drop God. And yeah, they may believe in metaphysics, but metaphysics are quite different from a belief in God. Even if they use religious mumbo jumbo, there's a difference between metaphysical beliefs and God and beliefs in a religion or a God or a deity or a higher power or a consciousness that's beyond our own, other than our own. I mean, metaphysics embraces that idea that there's a higher consciousness of ourselves. But let me move on. Now that was by A History of God, The 4,000-Year Quest of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam by Karen Armstrong. New York Times bestseller. I mean, I can go through books. And like I said, the point of doing this is not to say that these books are like, you know, indoctrinating tools or anything like that. I don't believe she's in the know and she's indoctrinating people. The point of reading these books is to emphasize that the belief is mainstream. It's already, you know, through people of higher education. These people graduate from universities and they come out and write books. They come, you know, they go into the positions of power of corporations and all this stuff, and they have a similar worldview. They have abandoned the idea of God. They are looking towards the future and creating this idea of a new world order, and they're buying it, you know, taking the bait, hook, line, and sinker. They believe in it, but they don't call it the new world order. You know what I'm saying? That's for people who are in the know. And that's why if you talk to them about the New World Order, they kind of roll their eyes at you. Like, oh, God, you're one of those people. This is called The Biotech Century, Harnessing the Gene and Remaking the World. The biotech revolution will affect every aspect of our lives. The way we eat, the way we date and marry, the way we have our babies, the way the way our children are raised and educated, the way we work, the way we engage in politics, the way we express our faith, the way we perceive the world around us and our place in it. All of our individual and shared realities will be deeply touched by the new technologies of the biotech century. Surely these very personal technologies deserve to be widely discussed and debated by the public at large before they become a part of our daily lives. The biotech revolution will force each of us to put a mirror to our most deeply held values, making us ponder the ultimate question of the purpose and meaning of existence. This may turn out to be its most important contribution. The rest is up to us. You know, and that's what I'm saying. It's these little hints. That's why when people talk about the New World Order, it's, you know, they think there's this high. I'm telling you, man, there's a lot of people who are supporting this idea without even knowing it. It's become mainstream. This is another book, Experiencing World Religions. This is the book that I got. This was one of my textbooks for my comparative religions course in college. And to my amazement, this is under the chapter Modern Influences on the Future of Religion. And guess what? The very first chapter is The New World Order. A century ago, the majority of human beings lived an agricultural life on farms and in villages, and many countries were ruled by monarchs. Over a relatively short amount of time, however, most kings and queens either disappeared or became largely symbolic. Democracy became a common, though not fully realized, ideal, and large numbers of people moved to cities. The political and economic landscape has changed dramatically over the last 20 years. After decades of dividing world symbolically into communist and capitalist halves, the Berlin Wall came down in 1989. After many of its republics declared their independence, the Soviet Union dissolved in 1991 and abandoned communism. And mainland China, although it remains a communist nation, now includes highly capitalistic Hong Kong, returned in 1997, and tolerates, even encourages, free enterprise. The international companies international companies are becoming significant entities, sometimes with more real power than many nations. At one time, people had to travel to experience different cultures and their food. Now a person can buy a donut and coffee at Dunkin' Donuts in Japan or a McDonald's hamburger in Israel. And we Americans have our pick of Chinese, Thai, Mexican, and French restaurants, to name only a few. Once foreign countries were genuinely foreign and far away, now through the use of satellites, news events in distant countries can be broadcast simultaneously across the world. And reruns of Baywatch, which now can be seen as far away as Bhutan, will be shown somewhere on the globe, one feels sure, until the world ends. Funny joke. We cannot help but wonder how this cultural unification will affect religion. So far, most of the world's religions have remained fairly separate traditions, even those that have spread to different countries and cultures. But globalism may make it impossible for separate religions to remain separate. Modern capitalism will also challenge religion, primarily by exposing relative broad segments of populations to its promotion of a fairly positive attitude toward money, that is, its promotion of financial success as a means to attain personal satisfaction. In the past, many religions preached the values of poverty, simplicity, and detachment, values that at one time were consistent with life as experienced by the vast majority. Now many religions are influenced by capital ideals, which esteem individual and group betterment, but it is a betterment that can be measured in material terms and can be paid for with money. As Robert Elwood has commented, the idea that poverty could be a state of blessedness is in it itself a favorite of preachers as recent as a century ago, is now hopelessly discredited. Even the most conservative pulpiteers nowadays exhort their poor to get ahead, but to do it by nonviolent means. We know that money can be used just as selfishly in modern world as in the past. But money is not always used for selfish and useless reasons. Take, for example, scholarship, contributions for disaster relief projects, endowments to the arts. The modern culture of money-based betterment will increasingly challenge religions to adjust to and produce the material cultural value, culture's value. It will challenge the religious idealization of poverty and will question carefully how much they contribute to measure human betterment. Globalism will also challenge parochialism, I don't know how to say that, and thus will contest any incomplete vision of reality offered by traditional religions. Finally, urbanism will challenge traditional religions to confront the tribulations of large-scale city life and take advantage of urban opportunities such as a wide choice of educational and career opportunities. Now, why did I read that? Well, it shows a picture here, by the way. Old world boundaries are disappearing through the spread of technology. Here, a woman in rural Bangladesh is using a cellular phone. And it shows this lady using her phone in Bangladesh. Why did I read that? Because the point is that under New World Order, the idea of the breaking down of religion into a unified religion is mainstream. That was what that whole thing was about. They're talking about all the challenges and whatnot that are going on. And granted, those challenges are there. But their idea of, I mean, the global idea of the New World Order is not absent of religion, and nor can it ever be. You cannot talk about the New World Order unless you talk about the religious or lack thereof of the New World Order. It's just, in my opinion, to do that is to look. It's like trying to describe the color of a flower by smelling it. You know, if you're a blind man smelling a flower and you ask him what color it is by smelling it, he's not going to get it. I mean, you have to understand what is the motivation of the people behind it, how it's affecting the world. Because, and this is, I guess, my grand conclusion here, if we're going to create change in this world, if we're going to do battle against the New World Order, it's going to be completely useless unless we are able to challenge the beliefs that they're perpetuating. We have to challenge these notions, this idea of elitism, this idea of, you know, the necessity for one world government in order for there to be peace. Because as it is now, we're losing the battle because there's more people, I think, for it than against it. Our movement is small in comparison to the rest of the world. And everyone's getting really excited right now, and that's good because a lot of people are becoming aware of what's going on. And that's a good thing. Don't get me wrong, I'm totally for that. It is a good thing that we're spreading the message and more people are becoming aware. But now, they're fighting back. The news agencies are reporting and they talk about us conspiracy theorists. And they talk about, you know, they roll their eyes at us. And they, you know, they have more of an ability to reach the public than we do. So we need to, if we're going to beat this war, number one, we need to have realistic ideological debate about this stuff. And we need to break it down and we need to say, this is wrong and this is why. But if you're not battling the idealism, you're only battling, come on. National sovereignty is not a motivating factor for most Americans today. People don't give a damn about it. The idea of God bless America, keep our borders strong, you know, let's do for ourselves is not something that people really care about. They don't. Going around telling everybody, oh, there's a North American Union coming is not going to make that many people rise up. There is not that many people who give a damn. Most people who graduate and go into places of power even, who are going to college and getting degrees and going into positions of influence are being confronted with philosophy and sociology and all this other stuff that tells them that they should abandon nationalism, that it was a bad idea. And you think that going up to them and saying, hey, you know, the North American Union is coming, you think they're going to care? They're not going to care. You have to battle the philosophy. This, you know, you have to go through all the different sciences that they're using to convince society to bring people into the New World Order, trying to expose it by trying to show the connections and saying, "See, they're the ones that are doing all the murdering." I don't think that's going to work either. I really don't. I think that what needs to happen is a straight up debate. We need to get back to some of the principles that America was founded on, the principles of freedom, and what is really the best for mankind. Not the, you know, progressive indoctrination of man into similar ideas that are allowed by people who are in power. That's not a world that is going to be happy. And I don't even care. Once they do get there, you're still going to have people who are willing to kill and murder ruling over you. I really doubt it's going to be that much of a utopia. I'm sorry. These people who think they're getting a utopia are not getting a utopia. I mean, I don't doubt that it would evolve into a straight-up police state, tyrannical-type government. The scary thing about it is technology will be so advanced at that point that there'll be no way to do anything about it. I mean, they'll have disarmed nations, they'll have, you know, tracking going on, and technology will be so far advanced, I have a hard time believing that people could ever, like, communicate in a way, like, try to rally up the troops to try to do a revolution at that point, because they'll take it out before it even gets started. And that is another dangerous aspect. That's another thing we should be telling people. This is a dangerous idea. More dangerous than the idea of governments who disagree with each other potentially going to war. I mean, it's a really dangerous idea. And it's no utopian of mine, no utopian vision of mine, that's for damn sure. We need to get back to the ethics of freedom, what our founders said. Our founders had a great deal of knowledge because they had come from a system like that. And they knew what the disadvantages of that system were. And just because the idealism of the system changed from, say, Christian, Catholic, Roman Catholic, if you will, ruling over the world, to this, you know, philosophy of science ruling over the world, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what idealism it is. None of them are going to be good for society if they rule over everybody. It's just not. Because it basically,
without a doubt, it means that they're going to have to infringe on the rights of others. They're going to have to eliminate others. They're going to have to indoctrinate others, because not everybody is going to agree on the same principles. They're just not. And they bait everybody, you know, like, especially Alice Bailey always baits everybody, talking about how, oh yeah, you know, there's still going to be nations. There's still going to be, you know, we're going to have a world central authority, but there's still going to be nations, and we're going to manage everything, but you're still going to be rich. And we're going to do all these things, you know, and there's going to be no war, and there's going to be no poor people and all this different stuff. But she's not going to be there, is she? She's not going to be ruling over. Maybe in her opinion, it wouldn't be that way. Maybe if she was ruling over things, it wouldn't be that way. But that's not, it's not, she's dead. And she ain't coming back. And the people who are going to be in the system ruling over things are the ones who are going to decide who starves and who, you know, who eats, who starves, what you can and cannot believe in, what you can and cannot do, you know. And based on upon the research that I've done into the United Nations and stuff, it's a pretty grim, bleak world. I mean, I'm a nature lover, and there's a lot of places I'm not going to be allowed to go anymore because it's going to be part of a protected area. And no one's going to be allowed there at all. You know, like, I understand there's a necessity for progress. Don't get me wrong. I believe that progress is a necessity. We have to progress, and we will progress. It's human nature to progress. But I don't believe this is the real progress here. Real progress is allowing the world to be free and helping freedom along. If America just spent less time trying to pursue this global control for the sake of this universal vision that Brzezinski talks about, and spent more time supporting true democracy throughout the world, true Republican form, people rule democracy and smaller government, then I think it would be a far peaceful world right now. I mean, think about the American involvement in the wars and the people who are involved in starting most of the wars. The wars are not the evidence that man is primitive, and the wars are going to be healed. The dangers of war are going to go away because these people take over. These people already had control, and this is the wars that they're creating. I mean, it's just baffling. People who think they're supporting this agenda because they think it's for the best of mankind are being fooled big time. And I hope we can understand that. And ultimately, we need to get into the philosophy, get into the thing. And I'm the reason I'm going through Freemasonry, like I said before, not because Freemasonry is of any real importance. It's really not. I mean, I don't want to see Freemason lodges destroyed or anything. I think they're more than welcome to believe whatever they want, practice whatever they want, and do whatever they want. As long as they can do it in a peaceful manner where other people can be free. Now, the reason I'm going through Freemasonry is because some people in Freemasonry have this hierarchical mentality. They're forming associations, and they're trying to pursue this thing called the Great Work. Not all of them, some of them. And even beyond that, Freemasonry basically lays out an educational path that started, you know, how many hundreds of years ago? I think the earliest record we have is the 1500s that Freemasonry was around. Since then, at least, indoctrinating people into this belief system and getting people to come along with this agnostic, this view, this pursuant of this, you know, utopian vision. And it's become mainstream. And it was through Freemasonry, I believe, that it occurred. Now a lot of people can learn about it. They don't have to go to Freemasonry anymore. We're in a different age now. Nowadays, the dissemination of information is pretty much open to whoever wants. If you want to believe in Satan, you can. You may have people protesting out in your yard, but they're not going to burn you or anything like that. That's not the society that we live in these days. We are freer today. But those freedoms are about to be, you know, and they always give themselves a modicum of, you know, praise. They praise themselves in reference to the freedoms that we have today, because they say, see, we did this. And it's true, they did. But they only did it so that they could overthrow the powers that were there. And now they're moving in the direction of taking them away on behalf of their own faith. So, you know, yeah, thanks for nothing. You know what I'm saying? It's a passing thought. And not to mention, there's a lot of people dying over these ideas. So, morally, I'm against it. I have to be against it. I cannot, you know, I cannot just pretend that this is not it. It's just a political thing. It's not a political thing. It is based upon religious perception. Whether it be you want to call it a religion or not, and that's debatable. It is a religious perception. And, you know, not to say that you can't have the religious perception, as long as the certain elements within that perception, The ones that think that you have to teach people that you can deceive people, that the ends justifies the means, that it there's a lack of this morality aspect that I totally agree with. Like, my website is called Truth, Love, and Freedom. I believe in those three principles, and anything that contradicts it, I'm pretty much against. You know, I believe in speaking the truth, seeking the truth, and so on. I believe in love and caring about other people, even if you disagree with them. And I believe in freedom. Freedom for everybody. Everybody has the right to believe whatever they want to believe. And as long as they have the freedom to act on those beliefs, as long as it doesn't affect anybody else, there's no reason that I should be upset. And that's why I like being on Revere Radio, for example. Because it's true free speech. If I want to use the F word, I can use the F word. And no one's going to be upset. Like Rob always says, you know, you can make the choice to listen or not. If you don't like it, change the channel. That's freedom. That's the kind of world that caters to everybody. Yeah, there are some consequences involved in that. You're going to hear some things you don't want to hear. You may see some things you don't want to see. But that's freedom. The only other thing it could be than freedom is some form of tyranny. I mean, there's just no ifs, ands, or buts about it. It's tyranny or freedom, and you have to choose. And you better hope that if you choose tyranny, it's your belief system that's going to win. Because if it's not, you're going to think that world sucks. All right, I'll do one last quote. I'm feel free to call in 1-877-REVERE-0. 1-877-738-3730. This comes from... I love this. I got this. I had to get this. And I'm glad I did, because it's actually really interesting, because he talks about Freemasonry and everything. But it's The Complete Idiot's Guide to Astrology. There you go. This lays it out for you really simplistically. But how does he conclude? What does he say? Under the quote, under the chapter, What the New Millennium Heralds. It's time to get out our astrological crystal ball and predict what is in store for the world's future. First, let's go back to the philosopher E. Allen Meese to see what he has to say about the future. For starters, Meese believes unequivocally that the time of big wars is behind us. Oh, yay. They always use that stuff. Like, that's going to justify all the wars they created to get there. Oh, there will still be squabbles and revolutions, but Meese believes global war is a thing of the past. This, and I'm sure the squabbles will be people like us saying we don't want to go along with this government. But Meese believes global war is a thing of the past. This is certainly good news. More good news is that the period of spiritual renewal began in 1966 will gather still more momentum. Growing numbers of people will accept alternative and holistic healing practices. This is already happening even within the medical profession, and these will be integrated into a conventional medicine. Many astrologers agree that the new millennium will be a time when many boundaries that have separated people, political borders, ethnic and racial problems, like the political borders, and religious and cultural differences will begin to dissolve. A global community is in our future. A community of people working together to achieve unimagined possibilities. With Pluto and Sagittarius transforming all of our social structures, there are some major changes in store that will reshape the way we think and act. The next chapter, the end of capitalism as we know it. Capitalism will reform itself completely. When capitalism began, labor was in short supply and natural resources were plentiful. Today, it's just the opposite. Billions of people are in the labor force, and natural resources like fossil fuels, fertile soil, and some minerals are in short supply. This means that all of our economic systems must change completely to eliminate these old and no longer true assumptions. Taxes on labor will eventually be replaced with taxes on resources for both companies and individuals. Instead of being taxed on what we earn, we'll be taxed on the resources we use and on how we impact the environment. As you can imagine, a lot of attitudes, accounting practices, tax laws, and the like will have to change to get to this point. But it will happen. Capitalism must change to reflect our present situation. Interesting, huh? Because we're hearing about that right now from the United Nations. Our concept of time, one of our... Okay, this is our changing relationship to time. Our concept of time, one of our hidden social structures, will also change. As people become more learned in astrology, they'll begin to realize that each day has a different set of potentials. And as they come to understand that each individual is made up of a completely different combination of energies, it will become obvious that every year is also different. We will begin to pay attention to the daily cycles, planetary retrogrades, phases, and signs. We will plan our schedules, work on projects, and live our day-to-day lives. We'll schedule important meetings and announcements and begin new projects at appropriate times. When the final outcome comes are sure to be positive ones, not during disastrous void of course, moons, at timeouts. We won't buy cars or computers during the Mercury retrogrades or make important purchases during void moons. A new world awaits. We are poised on the cusp of unimagined possibilities for both humans and humanity. And what we do with the potentials and energies that are represented by the planets is up to each one of us. We can use astrology to achieve some of these unimagined opportunities, and to that end, this book is only the beginning, but it's a solid beginning, one we hope you'll embrace as the first steps toward the millennium filled with the wonderful possibilities for all of us. And then it's the least you need to know. What's happening overhead is related to what's happening all around us in society, styles, politics, and art, to name just a few areas. The precession of the ages has led us to our present time, the dawning of the age of Aquarius. With Pluto in Sagittarius, the Neptune and Uranus in Aquarius, we are living in the time in what is called a high time, or a super resonance, a time of unlimited creative potential. With the millennium, global warfare will become a thing of the past, differences between people will dissolve, and alternative medicine will become a part of the norm. Capitalism will be reinvented to take into account our finite resources and massive population, and people will come to understand the importance of astrological time. What we do with the marvelous opportunities ahead is up to each one of us. It sounds great. This great world of the future. If only the people knew who were embracing these ideas that the real people in power and the ones behind the movement, the ones who taught them this crap, believe that they're primitive, that they're not capable of ruling and have these super elitist mentalities. I think they would view this peaceful world in the future much differently, but they don't know it. And that's why I'm trying to expose it. That's the most important thing I can do, is get people to realize what's really going on behind this whole thing. Because I'm telling you, I jumped on board of this. Like, I first heard about it, the New World Order and all that, back at a time when I was investigating New Age, because I was trying to become part of it. I thought I was going to become part of it, because it seemed really cool, and I liked a lot of what it teached, you know, on the surface level. But, you know, being an inquisitive natured person, I started investigating. I got down to the root of the religion and found that there was a connection to Masonry. Then I started investigating Freemasonry and started finding out that there's a whole bunch of things that branch out from Freemasonry. Not only mystery traditions, but you're talking about Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, several cults, you know, all these different things. I mean, you can go into all the different denominations and the Baha'i Faith, the Thule Society, all these different organizations that have had a huge influence on people's theology and politics. And they're there. They're there all over the place in major positions of power. And obviously, I had to investigate. So I did. And this is what I came across. And I believe, and I hope you agree, that it's pretty fundamental to understanding how to beat this. If you want to beat it, you have to understand what it is. You can't just, you know, I mean, you're looking at the external symptom of an internal thing going on. The New World Order is an external symptom. It's something that's being developed and it's being caused, and not because a few group are indoctrinating the rest of the world per se, but because the rest of the world is actually starting to believe these ideas, and no one's doing the research to find out if it's true or not. I mean, these people, I just don't see, if you get into the root of it and you really dig into it and find out where these beliefs come from, you'll find out that a lot of it is just, it's garbage. It's made out of deception. I mean, number one, this idea that you're incapable of understanding, so we're not going to tell you. Oh, we're going to get in positions of power because you're primitive, more like an animal. We're going to guide you because you're too stupid to understand what to do. We're going to conceal the truth. We're going to lie to you about what it actually means. You know, I mean, is there? I mean, what? Where's the ethics here? Where's the love that these people claim to have? The compassion for the rest of mankind. If their compassion is based upon this idea that, you know, that they have to help us go into a society that they think is better for us, and that's their idea of compassion. Well, they can keep it. I don't want it. You know, I'm not interested in it. All I care about is freedom. And that's why I start my show with that little montage of talking about freedom and resistance of tyranny. It's what I believe in. Truth, love, and freedom. I hope you do too. I hope that the things you're motivated by are things as important and fundamentally important as those. And if you believe in this New World Order, then by all means, I don't think that you shouldn't pursue it. But don't try to indoctrinate my kids. Don't try to push your beliefs and be deceptive and lie about what you actually believe. Don't think that you're better than me. I will not put up with that shit. I don't think I'm better than anybody else. I sure as hell ain't going to put up with somebody thinking they're better than me. I think we're all just individuals with our own particular ideas. I celebrate diversity. I celebrate the idea of the individual who has had a different experience and path, and I like to learn from other people. I read in the other religions, and I started doing that because I was curious about them, not because I was trying to, you know, do anything negative against them. And I, granted, there are some people who are not that way. But that's why we have to encourage it. We have to set an example. We have to say, this is the world we want. And I think that there's a deep essence within every single individual who will look at those principles and go, that's true. I can agree with that. I want to participate in this idea, this world vision of freedom. I think people will. I really do. I think you'll start to see that, you know, you'll always have some people causing problems. But the vast majority of people are not that way. Although it does seem like they, you know, I mean, certain people are leading them down paths because they feel like they're at war for themselves. And they are. People are being attacked. When they feel like they're attacked, they take the defensive and they attack back. And so everyone's at war with each other. And these guys are masters at provoking each other to fighting. And that's what they do. They come into these systems and they start preaching their bullshit and get people thinking that they're better or they're, you know, or thinking that, you know, Islam needs to be destroyed because it's a horrible religion and that Christianity is trying to take over the government and force everybody into a theocracy, and they get you thinking all kinds of crap. But if you talk to the average person, I mean, we all know Christians. We all know, I know people who are Islamic. Maybe you don't. I do. I know people who are Hindu. I know people who are occultists. I know Freemasons. I know Rosicrucians. And they're all good people. And they all believe in this idea of freedom. Every single one I talk to, they all go, yeah. Everybody just wants to live the life that they want to lead. They don't want to be indoctrinated or told that they can't. If everybody had that, we would have a utopia. I guarantee it. It wouldn't be one in which, you know, I mean, obviously, Christians are not going to be able to convert everybody to Christ, and that's a consequence of freedom. I'm sorry, you know, and if you're a Christian and you think that that's what the world has to become, well, let me tell you something. The Bible doesn't teach that. Jesus gave everybody the free will to decide whatever the hell they wanted to believe. So back off. You know, and almost every religion that I've looked into, Islam, for the most part, is also embraced the same ideals. Now, I haven't really investigated Islam too much, but from what I understand and the people I've talked to and the quotes that I've read, it's very similar to the Bible in that sense. But every single one of these religions, if you cross them and you start threatening their existence, they're going to rebel. They're going to fight back. Every single ideology, religion, philosophy, politics, social structure, everything, you know, race, anything you can imagine, if you attack them, they're going to fight back. And I think that for the most part, the people who are doing all the fighting are a very small group of people. So if the principles of freedom were being taught, I think that, you know, everything would be cool. I really believe that. Maybe I'm naive. Most of these books that I read, they talk about people like me as being naive. Perhaps I am. You know, perhaps I'm just still young and idealistic. But then again, I don't see what the alternative is. You know, I think I'm probably one of the few people in this world that, when I think about a utopian society, I don't look at what I believe and say, I want that to happen. Because that's just not utopian. Not, well, it is for me. I mean, shit, if I was king of the world, you know, I could eat anything I want. I wouldn't be bad. I would actually probably enjoy it for the most part. I think I'd be a pretty good king. I wouldn't hurt people and everything. But, you know, who doesn't want that kind of existence? But be realistic here. You know, that it's just not a realistic worldview. I mean, the reality is we need to allow each other to be free. And we need to preach freedom above all things. And in order to destroy this belief system, which is going to lead us away from our freedoms, to go against people like Brzezinski, you need to be well-versed in this stuff. You need to be studied. You have to educate yourself. You cannot listen to speakers, and you can't, you know, staying on street corners with signs or bullhorns or anything else is not going to make the change. Well, and I'm talking too, like, recently I came across this awareness because I was talking to somebody and I said, you know, if we had a revolution, what would happen? You know, honestly, I think that if we had a revolution, people would probably install a worse government than we have today. I mean, honestly, they would follow some dipshit who is really, you know, loud and intense personality, and there's a sheep mentality among people. I mean, we see it everywhere, and I don't know why people do it, but hey, some people are that way, and nothing against you, but some people would just naturally follow somebody, and that person could end up easily become a tyrant. I mean, no matter what belief system they have. I don't want revolution. We had a revolution, and we got a good government. A government that helped bring about so much change in the world. It was that form of government that inspired the blacks to protest and get, you know, and the suffrage movement and everything else. It was that idea of freedom that caused revolutions and caused positive change in the world. And we need restoration, not revolution. That's what I think. We need to restore ourselves back to the principles that we had, where everybody was allowed to be free, where your rights ended, where the other person's rights begin. I mean, I really, and how we, you know, and the debate can happen. As long as we embrace those principles, the debate can happen. We can change, we can learn, we can evolve our government to be more suited to that capacity. As long as we're in agreement with the principles. I mean, I always say, I don't care about, I'm not against communism, I'm not against socialism. Shit, if they came up to me and said, hey, we want to take, you know, $50 out of your check every month to give to the poor, and they actually wanted to give it to the poor and not the government, I would be for it. I'm down with that. I want to help the poor. $50 isn't that much. I can afford that. It's worth it to me. So I'm not against these ideas. I don't want to be forced into it. So that idea of socialism, I reject. You know, but not all principles of socialism. Some of it is a pretty damn good idea. That's why people fall into it. Deceptively, because there's aspects of it we know about. We're like, hey, that there's this aspect and that aspect. You know, that's going to form communism and it's going to be tyranny and you don't want to go there. But I believe in small government is the best way to facilitate it. If we had small governments, there's local accountability. And if there was enough people embracing these ideas of freedom, you know, there wouldn't be wars. I really don't believe it. I believe most of the wars that have happened have been defensive, based upon certain elements seeking more power. I mean, that's what I think. But I'm running out of time here. Anybody want to call in? 1-877-REVERE-0. You got like a few minutes before I play a song. And tell me what you think. Next week, I think I'm going to go ahead and start the initiation process. Like I said, I'm going to go through the initiation. My purpose is not to, you know, demonize Freemasons or the people who participate in the mystery schools. They're welcome to believe whatever they want. I totally am okay with that. My only point is to get into some of the philosophy that I felt, because I honestly believe that this worldview that is being perpetuated comes from them. I just can't help but think that. It comes from Freemasonry. And where Freemasonry comes from, no one knows. I mean, maybe it's from the mystery schools, the ancient world, and that which caused the ancient empires and killed millions of people then. I don't know. All I know is it's a dangerous idea, and this is where I got it from, and I can see it all over the government, and I don't think it's a coincidence. I mean, that's why you have so many leaders involved in it. But also, I see this effort to demonize them, Christians who want to just talk about how they worship Lucifer and sacrifice babies. I'm not into that. I think that's a bunch of crap, honestly. But there are some valid things wrong with Freemasonry, but the only way we're going to get into those is if we educate ourselves on what it actually is. Go through the process. And it's not like it's not available today. I mean, there's been so many expositions on it now. You can pretty much find every secret in Freemasonry online. I mean, with a Google search. You know, and you may not understand it because they never, the secrets, I mean, the secret words, Jobulon, for example. I mean, what the hell does that mean? If you don't study it, you ain't going to understand it. I've heard people say, oh, it's another name for Lucifer. No, it isn't. You need to do your research. There's a real application for the word Jobulon in their process of education. And you need to go through the process and know all the different aspects and figure it out in order to understand it. Something that I did. And you know, if you listen, you'll go through it with me and we'll talk about it, and you're welcome to call in. I'll have Freemasons, if you're out there, I'm not against you, and I'm more than willing to bring you on the show and let you talk about what I could be saying and how it's wrong or anything else. You know, feel free. I'm down with that. I'm not against it. So I think that's going to be the end of my show. Truthlovefreedom.org. My email address is admin@truthlovefreedom.org. Send me an email. I'm going to kick it in the River chat room tonight, so you can come in and talk to me there. Sign up for Revere Radio. Become a member. Not very much money. Lots of good content. So make sure you check into that at revereradio.net. Peace and love. Talk to you next week. Yeah. Yeah, you won't catch me saying God bless America. I left the states, that's a godless America. You in a catacomba, they moving Israel to Arizona. Microchip the Rockefeller type of shit. You like the shit cause you don't like to sit and read about things. You'd rather sit and stew, like baby Griffin, other baby missing. Got you shook, got you scared, got you acting like a puppet. Like Kermit, you better get your gun permit, my dude. And I hate that expression, that might be my age showing. But when I write, I leave the page glowing. Unlike the windowless mausoleum where the skull and bones meet, they want us not to see them. Truth dodges, I stay away from my son. It lodges, their faces can make me nauseous. They're basically making me cautious. Now your gun's clapping, and you want some ultra shit. But when it comes to change, you don't wanna make it happen. Bankers, lawyers, distrust, paranoias. You think you're thinking, but you're not, they can destroy us. InfoWars are intercepted, living on a prison planet, living in satanic times with the fuck it. Laugh it off, laugh at Alex Jones, laugh at Aaron Russo, but I'm too smart to do so. Yeah. You're telling me to think outside the box, I'm clever. Are you to use a phrase that's been around for life forever? And since you use that, it only proves that you can't do that. You need some years of school back. It's so cliche. You're too busy being in the building to join me in building a better future for our children. We on the same page. What a lame phrase. What a cop out. What a way to walk out with a mental block out. It is what it is. Say that bullshit cliche. Try to raise your kids. Fuck serving the fiends. Y'all too big for your britches. True religion better make maternity jeans. Be perfectly clean, y'all. Dirty motherfuckers never pass inspection. I keep you nerds running like a class election. Your face be fixed like the last election. My blood boils like gunfurs with a staph infection. Well, y'all bounce, I make a beautiful killing. I stay in disguise like a Scooby-Doo villain. I'm musically illin'. Never ask why I rip them scrubs. Victory don't repeat itself, history does. My name is Esoteric. I make beats and I rock too. I rock rhymes, motherfucker, I'ma rock you.
That's where the heat is.